Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. This is Christian Stipa, sitting here with David Niles on my right, as well as Adam Minningham on my right, Juan on the buttons, and Jeem is not in here today.
Jeem!
We are discussing, what is it, infused virtue versus acquired virtue. Correct. And before I step off the mic, I just want to give out a shout out to my family, the Stipa family. Mom, Dad, Lex, Calf, G, Bridge, Christian, Thaddeus, and Mark. I love you guys, and I miss you so bad. See you at home.
Thank you.
Right. Right on.
That was Christian Stipa, everybody, from Arizona, Tucson, Arizona. Speaking of Arizona.
We're going there.
We're going there. We're going there this weekend. We are going to Mesa.
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 Mesa,
bro.
Mesa. You know what?
If you say like, Mesa, you say people are like,
Tempe,
no.
Phoenix, Scottsdale, Mesa, like, and you're like, oh, these must be really far. They're like 15 minutes apart. They're like really close together. All these big places that you hear about
like
in Arizona,
Phoenix.
They're all basically Phoenix.
I mean, Scottsdale is like different because they've got more money.
Oh, well, okay. That's, you know, fair. That's fair.
I don't know about the other places. I just know all the fancy people be in Scottsdale.
Go in Scottsdale?
Yeah.
So we're
going
to be there for St. Philip.
It's where I do my shopping. It's in Scottsdale because I'm so rich. Drive my Porsche.
People in Scottsdale are going to not like us. Hey, so we're going there.
You know how you know they're rich? They have grass in Scottsdale.
And that's tough to do in Arizona.
It's still so ugly there.
It is still ugly?
Oh, yeah.
Christian says it's still ugly. I take his word for it.
Rich people often are ugly. No, that's not
that's
true.
That's not
usually
true at
all. They're usually beautiful.
Beautiful people, yeah. So we're going there for the St. Philip Neri.
People think I'm rich. That's,
can I finish this?
That's what the thing
I am
is.
Like trying
I'm
my
so
best
rich.
To tell why we're going
but
there.
But look, we're going for a Catholic comedy conference, and I'm being funny.
Just interrupting me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I at least
you need
know
to
what?
Get a new shtick.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, you do that way too much.
It's good. I just, you know, you like you think something's funny and it'll get old, and it just doesn't.
Some things just don't.
It just doesn't get old.
It doesn't get old.
Not for me.
So we're looking forward to that. We're going to go there this weekend. And
to be correct, it's the Philip Neri Men's Conference.
No, not Men's Conference.
Well, it's not a men's conference. You're right. But it is, it's not like specifically a comedy conference, but it's a comedy conference. I mean
it's called
we're going
a comedy festival.
Right? So
Father Leo Pedalinghug will be there as well.
If he's funny, I've never met him. You got to meet him.
Yes.
Last year?
No, like three years ago.
No, it was... Oh, well, actually, now that it is 2022, it was 2 years ago. But you got to meet him in 2020.
Okay.
Which, up until a few days ago, was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. But I know that he can, like, he can sing, he can cook, he can break dance. So if he's also funny, That is gonna, that will be impressive.
And he's, you know, a black belt. And he's a black belt.
And he's black belt. He's a black belt.
Yeah.
I'm a black belt too.
Whatever, Juan.
Whatever, Juan. Yeah, we don't believe
whatever,
him.
Dude.
Hey, but speaking of what Juan did ask us the other day, he goes, hey, what's the oldest whiskey we've ever had on the show? And I thought that was, one, a great, great question. Two, I was not sure.
I didn't know.
I did not know. I know that we've had an 18-year before, but I'm not sure. But tonight, we will have definitively the oldest scotch that we've ever had on the show. I know this just based off of the year that we're the one we're having. This is Dewar's Double Double Aged Ultimate Smoothness 27-year-old scotch. Blended scotch. So
it's double, double aged.
Double, double aged. Yes. Triple damp, triple stamp, and double stamp.
I was going to ask you, are we triple stamping and double stamp here?
Yeah, so it's a unique four-stage aging process. So what they do, they have grain alcohol, they have malt alcohol. They're aging those in oak casks.
Separately.
Separately. Stage two, they blend those aged grains and those aged malts into another oak cask. Stage three, they take the aged grain and aged malt combined, blend into one barrel. So we had two barrels going down to one barrel.
Right. So they don't, you said stage two, they blend them together. Stage one, you got grain over in one barrel, malt in another one. Stage two, they just take those and put them both into new barrels.
Well, yeah, they blend the grains,
but not
together,
with each other, not
with
each
other.
Not
grain and malt,
right?
Yeah,
okay,
that's good clarification.
I
apologize. Stage three, they take the grain and the malt, blend it together, put it in one barrel, and it keeps there. And then stage four is a meticulous blend of.
They take the blend into a new barrel,
into a sherry cask.
Ooh, in a sherry for like a few months.
For about 6 months, yes. So the tasting notes, it says...
It's a lot of barrels, you know.
Floral notes with honeyed fruits, subtle spice, silky smooth finish is what it says.
So this was expensive?
Yeah, so at first I thought I was getting a better deal than what I really it was. So the bottle was $115, I believe. However,
you pull it out of the box.
You pull it out of the box. It's a half bottle.
It's a small. It's a little bottle.
It's a little bottle. It's a half bottle. So
it's really 200. If you're a whole bottle, $230 equivalent.
Correct. But it's a 27 year.
I mean, really, that's still not bad for a 27 year old whiskey.
Time. It's 10 years older than Christian.
Yeah.
Just thinking that.
So, anyway, so we're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers!
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers, Juan.
Especially cheers to his holy name. Today's the feast of the holy name of
the
Jesus.
Holy name of Jesus, yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
It smells good.
So you get the sherry
very
much on the nose. Cranberry.
It's got a velvety smell.
A velvety smell.
Don't you think so?
I don't know what that
smells
means.
Smells like velvet.
I don't know what that means.
Like,
I thought velvet was more of a texture.
It is, but like if that texture was a smell, that's it, baby.
Roses?
Hmm.
Yeah, roses are kind of like, they're velvety.
Hmm.
What think you?
That was very interesting. That's very interesting. The palate's very smooth. The ending is a little aggressive bite to the end. It's not as smooth. The ending is not near as smooth as what I thought it was going to be, being a 27 year. The very end of the finish has a very sweet taste to it at the very end.
Yeah.
After you think the party's over, it comes back with a little sweetness.
That is, it does come across strong.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, it's 46%, so it's not like crazy high.
It's very good. I don't know. It's tough because you have such high expectations being a 27-year
personally,
scotch.
I really like it because this is just the kind of scotch that I like. You know, I like more aggressive.
Yeah, but it's not peaty or smoky at all.
No, but like, it's not boring.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's putting up a fight, and I like it.
The sweetness, the sherry at the end, you can really taste the sweetness at the end.
Yeah, you get like a lot of the citrus or like kind of orangey, you know, that you get with a sherry.
I like it. Hey, how was your Christmas? We didn't have a whole show.
Fantastic.
We didn't do even a show last week.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, you know, we took a break for Christmas. My Christmas was a little crazy. I told you maybe 2 weeks ago that we do one of the longest family traditions of the Minahan household.
Is now actually, it's broken.
It, well, I mean, it's not like we still don't do it. You broke. But it's midnight mass. So I know that my great grandfather took his family to midnight mass. So that's as far as I can like definitively say that my family has done something throughout the generations.
I'll bet baptizing your children goes back further.
That's probably true. Yes, that's probably accurate. So, but we get our kids, we keep them up. We decide, we change the game plan this year. So normally if we have them asleep, we wake them up and get them all ready.
Really?
Yes.
I've wondered about that.
But this year we decided, you know what? We're going to have them do a late nap and then just keep them up. Because last year they were like super cranky and just like, because they get wake up in the middle of the night.
Right.
So we said, we did that. About 10 o'clock rolls around, 10:15. I'm like, okay, it's time to start getting ready for mass. You know, getting everybody ready. I stand up and I catch the stomach bug and realize we're not going to midnight mass.
So you weren't feeling bad until you stood up?
Yep, I was not feeling bad at all. Now, the stomach bug did run through my family.
Just like that. But I caught it. I stood up and just like that.
But you know how sometimes the stomach bug will do that? It's like all of a sudden you're like, you're feeling just fine, and then all of a sudden you realize, I'm not feeling fine.
For me, when that happens, I realize, you know, actually, over the last 10 minutes, I have been feeling weird. I wasn't paying attention to it, but,
which was really unfortunate because we got, the kids were already still up at 10 p.m., 10:30, which is way past their bedtime. And then we just had to put them, then Haley just had to put them down because I was incapacitated at the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was brutal for us.
We went to, I think, like six, whatever time they had mass, the vigil, Christmas Eve. And I remember getting back, getting the kids to bed, all the presents situated, and then, all kinds of stuff, cleaning up things, all the stuff that you have to do as a parent on Christmas Eve, and going to bed at 11:45 and saying, oh my gosh. What if mass was about to begin in 15 minutes? And I was thinking, I am so glad that we don't go to midnight mass.
It's a beautiful mass.
I bet it is. And someday I will go. When my kids are older, that feels like a more appropriate time for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go. But it's a beautiful mass. Right now, this is not just for me, Adam.
It's not the season.
For me.
It's not the season of your life.
For me.
Right. It wasn't for me either.
Not this year.
Yeah, which is a little brutal. But so it's a little different. We didn't travel near as much as a family, which we normally do, which was unfortunate that we didn't get to see all the family. But it was kind of nice to
take it easy.
Take it easy.
You should fake a sickness next year.
No. I want to see the family.
Yeah, but
it was pretty nice. All right, we'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada on the buttons. We've got Christian here in the peanut gallery. Thanks for coming. We're drinking some Dewar's double aged 27-year-old scotch.
Mm-hmm. Dave, we have some new sponsors of the Catholic Man Show this year. Want to give a shout out to them. You can help us. If you're not a patron of the show and you're like, I can't be a patron right now, perhaps you should look at some of our new sponsors of the show. If you go to their websites and maybe even order some of their products or services, That helps us because we send you them. They in turn support the show, and it's a win all around.
Yeah.
So,
especially if you're already gonna, if you're looking for a, if you're gonna take a pilgrimage,
right? Select International Tours.
Check out Select International Tours. Like we've been working with, together with them now for about a year, and the guys are there just really great.
2 years.
2 years. You're right. 2 years. And so, I really do like the guys over there. I mean,
yep. We're very picky.
They're very good people.
We're very picky about our sponsors, like because we don't do this for a living. We get to kind of pick and choose who we want as our sponsors. So, the sponsors that we pick them for the long haul. So that way, you guys know that they are good people. You know, good.
Are you wanting to companies. Wait to reveal the new sponsor until?
Yeah, I want them to actually listen to it.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
So anyway, check them out. It would help us. Appreciate it.
What's the man gear today?
Before we do, something that we're going to be doing soon. XS90. Let's talk about that. I'm actually really pumped about XS90 this year.
I'm interested about that because I remember when we finished 2 years ago, you said, I'm definitely never doing that again.
Right. You're right. I did say that.
But I also, you know what? I felt like, I'm really glad that's over.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get fat again. But I'll tell you, at the end of Exodus 90 last 2 years ago, I was looking good.
Well, there you go.
Not that's why I'm doing it, but I was, man.
Yeah.
I was looking good.
I am excited about it, though. I think that it is something, if you're listening, you haven't done Exodus 90 before, and you're looking to kind of supercharge your spiritual life, jumpstart it, if you're looking for an opportunity to grow in friendship with other Catholic men, highly recommend checking out Exodus 90.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about so there's a lot of things that people always moan about with Exodus 90, like the showers.
That's what everybody talks about.
The alcohol, the cold showers, the sweets. But I really appreciate the 20 minutes of silent prayer.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I really appreciate that. And then I also appreciate the... I have to regulate my social media because my job entails social media as well. I've noticed that I have actually spent more time on social media instead of less. And so it'll be nice for me to...
I mean, you still have to do your job, you know.
Right, but it'll be nice for me to take that into more consideration throughout the day.
Right. Like, am I on it because I am just like... Need to be? Am I scrolling?
Right. Or is like, oh, just because I get a notification doesn't mean I have to check it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to breaking that habit. Oh, nice.
Christian has a light phone.
I actually listened to your podcast, and my dad and I have decided to get it.
Nice.
Yeah. Listen to our podcast, got the light phone. Dig it.
So, Father Carvajal has a light phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet. But yeah, I mean, really, Exodus 90, it did change my life. It really did. I'm a big fan of it. And it's really that 20 minutes of prayer. Mm-hmm. Specifically, that's what it was. And I've kept doing that since.
And getting back into the readings every day. Uh-huh. I have not been doing or like reading the readings every day. Uh-huh. And so I'm looking forward to getting back into the habit of reading the daily readings.
Every morning, get up, say Auxilium Christianorum prayers. I read the readings, and then I do my 20 minutes of prayer. You know, like having the readings before the 20 minutes
helps
gives
you.
Yeah, like it gives you something to chew on, gives you like, sometimes I'll just take one, like if there's one thing that just jumps out at me, it's not exactly Lectio Divina, I'm not sitting there.
Lectio Divina.
Is that what I said? Lectio Divina, that's what I meant to say, whatever it was I said.
Yeah.
It's not exactly that, I'm not just sitting there with the verse over, you know, like, for me it's just kind of like a starting point for my prayer. Not always, sometimes, it's really good. Having that 20 minutes...
is really important.
Yeah, I realized for years I was saying a lot of prayers, but I wasn't really praying.
Right.
You know, I didn't have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
My relationship with God was almost transactional.
Like I say this, I expect something back.
I've put in the work.
Right.
You know, I said my prayers, good. You know, and it just wasn't.
Was that good Pelagianist that you were?
I mean.
Or Janus. Maybe you're more a Janus.
I don't know. Jansenist?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Some kind of heretic.
I mean, you pick it, okay? whatever. I'll let you decide. I don't care. I just think like the idea of you being a heretic.
But no, I am excited about that. Juan's going to do it with us. Scott Bassett, our buddy Scott. Sam Guzman, the Catholic gentleman.
Maybe Father Porter. I'm pressuring him.
Maybe Derek Lissy.
Okay.
So it's a good group of men that we'll have. So anyway, okay, so the man gear today, we're going to jump into it. And this is something that I'm pulling from the topic this evening. The man gear is a speculative quarterly review academic journal that I am a subscriber of that I've really enjoyed. It's called The Thomist. You get 4 a year. It's not very expensive, but Father Thomas Joseph White is one of the main... he's the editor, I believe. Anyway, and so it's always really, really good. Yeah, so Thomas Joseph White... there's a bunch of them on here, but all Dominicans, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Dominicans on here. Really, really good academic journal. They give all different types of context of different things that are happening around the world. Like, so for this edition, they talk about the background of Aquinas on self-defense. So it takes deep dives into that. Prime Matter Revisited.
So this does not sound very readable. I mean, like...
No, so what it is... So
remember, it sounds like pretty heavy.
It is heavy topics. Most of the time, it is over my head. It is an intellectual push for me.
Uh-huh.
But remember when we were talking to Carlo Broussard and on the Five Ways and things like that, and I asked him, like, hey, so what are you reading?
I remember him recommending this to you.
Yeah, so he recommended this to me, and he said, I don't really read books any longer.
Books are for chumps.
Yeah, he said, I read essays and articles because they're very specific and they go really deep into a specific topic and they're, you know, between 40, 60 pages and then you're done. And so I can read a lot and over many different topics. And that probably helps him as an apologist as well, right? So you
and a philosopher.
And a philosopher because you can go over a lot of different topics and go deep into them.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so I decided, okay, I'll do that. So I got two different subscriptions. I got the Thomas, and then we've also, I think, done Nova et Verita, which is the Emeritus Rode publication. Scott Hahn is one of the editors of that. But anyway, so I really like the Thomas. I really look forward to it. I actually probably, one of the things I really like is at the end, they give reviews of different books, different essays. So they will critique different modern books or modern essays that are happening. So one of the book reviews that happened was the Gary Gulagrange book, The To Mystic Common Sense. And that's what led me to doing the book club that we do.
Did they rip it apart?
No, they of course not. It's Gary Gulagrange. And so it was really good. So anyway, I highly recommend it. We're going to be pulling And we're going to talk about an article that was in the Thomas. It's called The Perfection and Growth of Christ's Virtues by Dr. Michael A. Wall. He went AWOL on this article. I was trying to do it without laughing, and then I heard one laugh. But he really did a great job talking about what acquired virtue is, what infused virtue is, how you grow in both of them, did Christ grow in these virtues? How could he have grown in these virtues? How could he not have grown in these virtues? And goes through it. And it really is nice that he talks about it because it really brings home like the importance of the incarnation, the importance of the human nature of Jesus, which is very appropriate for today's time period.
I'm interested what he says about that because I have some guesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, I would guess that this is the answer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. I mean...
Well, hopefully I can do it somewhat justice. It is an intellectual challenge for me to read through it. But I had to go through and talk to David Dean at the end of the day today to make sure that I understood. Because he uses some words he just exclusively in Latin. And so it's like, I just want to make sure that I know what this means.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out I did. Shockingly.
Wunderbar.
Yeah. Very nice. Anyway, that's what the main gear is today. So I highly recommend it. The Thomist. It's a quarterly review.
Did you just Borat?
Yeah.
You went from Latin Borat. To Borat.
To Borat. Very nice.
I like you people.
So anyway, that's what that, I was trying to look to see if they had. Oh, it's out of Washington D.C.
I don't that see that makes me leery. You know, leery.
But that's where the Dominican House of Studies yeah, I know, is. I know. So that probably helps
with all the with all those preachers you got. They got over there. You'd think that the whole city'd be better off.
Well,
think about how bad it would be without
yeah. them. Yeah, exactly. So go and just Google the Thomist. You can. It's not very expensive. I can't remember exactly how much it is. Maybe it's like $60 a year or something like that. It's not very expensive. Very well worth if you're looking to take deeper dives into Thomistic philosophy, theology. Highly recommend The Thomist. It's a quarterly review.
Lovely.
Okay, so when we get back, we're going to talk about the perfection and growth of Christ's virtues. We're going to talk about acquired virtues, infused virtues, and all things virtue. We'll be right back. Hey guys, recently we met Mark Lozano at the Allentown Catholic Men's Conference, and he came up to us and said, hey, I used to invest money for the NBA, the National Basketball Association. Don't know if you've heard of this or not, but it's the National Basketball Association. Have you heard of this,
that
Dave?
That rings a bell.
That does ring a bell, yeah. I'm not saying that he actually invested money for LeBron James. I'm just saying that he was associated with the National Basketball Association.
Right, and so what Mark is doing now is he started Christ-Centered Capital, C3. And the whole project behind it is doing the due diligence for you so that you know more about the companies you're investing in. And he has a focus on, shocker, Catholic moral values in your investments. So if it's ever bothered you that maybe you're investing in companies that don't align with the values that we uphold as Catholics, this is a great way for you to get more information without having to do all the research. You don't have to spend hours and hours trying to find the things that maybe companies don't want you to know about their business practices, or are they a good investment at all? So this is something that Mark has a background in, and he is doing all the work for you so that you can focus your portfolio, your investments, in a more profitable and more moral direction.
So go to ChristCenteredCapital.com. That's ChristCenteredCapital.com. You'll be able to check out all the information that he has to offer. Christ-Centered Capital, where do your values lie? Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. If you're listening via radio, make sure you go check out thecatholicmanshow.com. We will definitely be going overboard on this topic. So if you want to catch the full episode, you can check it out on podcast, YouTube, or your thecatholicmanshow.com. If you go on YouTube, you'll catch in between segments all the shenanigans that go on at that point. But we want to thank all of our radio supporters. Catholic radio is very important to Dave and I, as you guys have probably known. And so we appreciate that. So tonight we're going to talk about virtue. We're going to talk about we try our best to talk about virtue on every show.
Mm-hmm. Tonight we're really talking about ways to get virtue, it seems like.
Get virtue.
How do you get it?
How do you get it?
Yeah.
How do you do it? How do you live it?
Right.
So we're going to talk about acquired versus infused virtues first. So acquired virtues. Dave, acquired virtues.
Acquired are those that you work to form a habit in.
Right. So a long time ago, we did an episode on natural versus supernatural virtues. Do you remember this?
I do.
I was there. You were there when that happened.
Yeah.
Juan, were you there when that happened? You were there?
Mucho.
Okay. I couldn't remember if you were there yet. Mucho. Okay.
That's me. Good. I want you to know that's me.
I know. You rubbed it. Yeah. I have average of the
five
people.
Made a contribution to the Spanish language.
Yeah. Mucho.
De nada mucho me gusto. That's another one I made. You're welcome.
So acquired virtue is that we cultivate on our own efforts, right? So these are the ones that you can continually grow throughout your life. Aquinas uses one of the examples of how you can grow in the virtue of fortitude, mm-hmm. Like in being able to train yourself to go into combat, right? So you can train yourself to grow in fortitude and in courage and to take, even at one point, in self-defense, to take one's life. And you can grow in those virtues and train yourself for those virtues. And you can see that, the military does that all the time, right? They go through trainings where simulations where there's mm-hmm. guns going off around you and chaos around you, yeah, and are
self-mastery.
Are you still going to focus on the mission, right?
I would just like to point out this is the first time you didn't use candy analogy.
First time I did not use. Well, hold on.
Yeah, give him some time.
Yeah, give me some time. This give is we're still a long time away. Yeah, we still got plenty of time for a candy analogy. So Aquinas talks about being able to grow in these virtues naturally, right? And prepare yourself, train yourself for this. Justice is another one, right? So you have judges who continually train themselves to make just judgments, right? Fair judgments.
Right.
And you can continue growing in these virtues. Infused virtues are given by God alone. They are the ones that you are infused through the sacrament of baptism, the theological virtues of faith, hope, and love. Some theologians actually add more than just those theological virtues, but for the sake of the discussion tonight, we'll just add.
Out of curiosity, what are the ones that other people add? We don't have to discuss it whether it's correct or not. Do you know? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly. I don't want to misspeak. Yeah.
So what this is saying is that the virtues, the theological virtues of faith, hope, and love, you cannot acquire.
Depends on what you mean, like, by that, I guess, because you could acquire them through baptism. But
it seems like charity, you know, it's what we, you know, it's really that we'd say charity. It seems like that's charity. You can practice charity and like.
Correct. So you're given.
Are you growing in it because as you practice it, God is infusing it more into you? Or are you growing in it because you're like reinforcing the habit?
So that's a good question. So that's twofold. Let's table that.
Okay. We'll come back to that.
So infused virtues, you can actually grow over time as well. So God gives you these graces and they can be, you can continue growing in these graces through God over time. So some of the stages of growth that you can grow in these in these virtues is there's three of them that Aquinas breaks down. These are my own like 1, 2, 3s, but he didn't use this terminology. But it's basically like at the beginner level when you're avoiding sin and preserving the gift of charity. So when you stop mortally sinning, you stop breaking that bond the relationship that you have with God on a continuous basis. That would be the beginner stage, which you just kind of take that in for a second. You know, the beginning stage of the spiritual life is when you stop sinning.
Right.
So the second one is like...
Mortally.
Mortally, yes.
Yeah.
The second one is what you can maybe call proficient, like a proficient stage where you're strengthened in charity by steadily advancing in greater works. So as you continue to, you know, it's like God will give you a little bit, and then if you do well with what he gives you, he may give you more. You know, so as you continue growing in these virtues, you have the greater capacity to do more. Like almost like magnanimity. You know, we've talked about that before on the show as well, like the virtue of magnanimity.
Yeah.
Like you can't just like jump into magnanimity, right?
Right.
You could maybe do a magnanimous act, but it wouldn't be the virtue of magnanimity.
It's the beginning.
The beginning
of virtue, but right.
Right. So it's kind of like...
One truth does not give you the virtue of honesty.
Of honesty, right. And then the third stage that Aquinas talks about is like the perfect stage. It's like when you perfect these virtues and you exercise in charity, all your charity is directed in union and enjoyment in God.
This is like when you play Street Fighter and you beat the other person with 100% health at the end. Remember? And then the announcer voice goes, perfect.
That's exactly what it's like.
Exactly.
Spot on.
You're welcome, bro.
Yeah. So when you strengthen these habits, so both the acquired virtues and the infused virtues, as you strengthen these, specifically the acquired virtues, as you strengthen these habits, you can relate to this, right? David, when you started like turning your life over to Christ and you started trying to live the virtuous life, you had to make mentally these decisions, right? You had to order yourself towards the good, and you had to make these decisions. No, I'm not going to do X. I'm going to do the right thing. And a lot of times you had to really, it took a lot of mental energy to make sure you weren't going to do X.
Right.
Right? You know, it took you a lot of effort to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And uh-huh. you maybe even entertain the idea of still doing it, even though you weren't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet.
Kind of like being tempted. You know you're not going to do it, but I like just the temptation. Like,
even just the thought of doing it.
Right.
Right. You know, so, but once you grow in these acquired virtues, you stop really thinking about it and you just start doing, you're ordered to the right, to the good. And so you stop thinking about it, and you, when you live these virtuous lives, you become, you have these habits that are the promptness. They are, they give you pleasure and they're ease. They're easy.
You get pleasure from the virtue.
From the virtue.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. Right.
Right.
Yeah. But so the
because you used to get pleasure from the sin. Yeah.
Right. But promptness is one.
And you reach the point where the sin is really becomes unthinkable.
Right. Well, and that's what the promptness is. Right. So it's like promptness. Like you don't even entertain the idea of sin. It is promptness. I know what is good. I do the good immediately without entertaining anything else.
Right.
You know, and by
you're repulsed by the idea of it.
Right. And by doing the good, it gives you the pleasure. It gives you pleasure of your intellect and will is pleased with doing what is right.
And it's not the same pleasure. It's not like, oh, no. I can get, you know, the pleasure you get from the sin. You could get that from the virtue. It's not. It's not as sensible.
No, but it's like, more satisfying.
Right. It is. It is far more satisfying. But
the sensible ones fleet very quickly.
But maybe sensible. I meant like sensual. Like you can't sense it as much.
Yeah.
When I said sensible, you know. So
yeah,
like
sensual. Yeah.
Pleasure from sin, you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's intellectually, you feel it. But yeah, it lasts but a moment. But the pleasure you get from virtue is sustained.
Mm-hmm. And then it becomes easier, right? So like those sins that you growing in the virtue in the spiritual life, the sins that you used to combat, that you used to struggle with, become easier, right? Because you have formed the habit of doing the good. Now, obviously, I don't want anybody to think that we're talking about that you can have your own salvation or that you can work for your own salvation.
Well, that's not what we're saying.
It's good to, you know, you can only do this through the grace of God, right? So,
sure.
But those are the kind of the stages of the spiritual growth and like how once you become virtuous, that those are the three things that Aquinas says that happen when you exercise those virtues.
Okay.
So acquired virtues are both generated and increased by doing it, by repetition in human acts, right? Like we discussed, the increase in infused virtues is due to God's action, which is just as the initial infusion is God's gift. So he continues to give you the grace to grow in charity. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. I just want to make sure.
Probably is going to do that still based on your own response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so these two things are more similar than I think they sounded at first, the acquired and infused, right? It seems like at first, oh, there's no cooperation here. Like, faith is just a gift from God. Either God chooses to give it to you in a lot or a little. It's his choice. Nothing you can do about it. Like, that's just the way what he gave you. But that's not true. God wants you to, he certainly desires for you to increase in these virtues. And so by cooperating with his will, with his grace, you increase your own capacity to receive them. And, you know, God does as he wills, but it's reasonable that he would infuse you with more of those graces as your capacity to receive them increases.
Yeah, and I would say like this goes back to kind of like the natural versus supernatural graces, right? So like the supernatural graces of the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance.
Yeah.
You know, as you continue growing that, which could be a natural virtue as well, like you can have natural aspects of that virtue, but the supernatural, for the love of God, as you continue to develop and become virtuous in these virtues, God will open up the capacity for you to.
Right.
To live those more virtuous
theological
life.
Virtues, you don't acquire those naturally.
Correct.
Right.
Right. Supernaturally only.
Infused.
Infused. Through the sacrament of baptism. We'll be right back.
Well,
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about virtue and how you get it. You gotta work. Virtue's hard, let's be honest. Acquiring virtue is hard. I hope to have one. Before I die, I hope to have a virtue.
Well, Aquinas says that, you know...
Just kidding, I have like a bunch already.
You know, the desire to have a saintly life is
a good start.
Is a start, yeah. So we just got done talking about infused virtues, acquired virtues, the natural, supernatural aspects of those.
So I kind of summed it up there at the very end of the last segment. Let me sum it up again. I want to make sure I understand this.
Let me sum up.
Because in both of these cases, I think that in one way or another, you have to work to grow in these virtues.
You have to cooperate with God's grace.
Whether it's cooperation, you know, so the natural virtues are going to be more of a cause and effect, at least on a natural virtue level.
Mm-hmm.
I practice telling the truth, therefore I become honest. Now, obviously, if you're telling the truth, you're still cooperating. God gives us the ability to do all things good, right? We can do nothing good without His grace. So,
correct.
He's the final cause of all good things.
Correct.
So if we're doing something good, it's not because we did it, but because we cooperated with His grace. But the same, I think, in that respect is true of these infused virtues, that we cooperated with them. However, it's the growth in those virtues is not like a cause and effect, like it is telling the truth, like makes you become honest. Having faith... You know, there's practicing faith is not exactly the way we grow in faith, you know, like by pursuing the interior life. I think when we grow our interior life, we kind of receive an infusion of more virtue in that way.
Well, I would agree.
So it's kind of like a nuance in, is this like a human practice or is this a supernatural reality?
Yeah, I think the acquired virtues are human practice.
Am I summing that up good?
Yeah, I think so. I think that.
Am I summing it good?
Yeah,
I like to do other stuff good too.
Yeah, but like a lot of good things. So the infused virtues are infused graces, almost like it's a supernatural reality. Mm-hmm. Yes,
but it's not like, oh yeah, sorry, you know, God just infused me with more faith than you. It's like no, I have pursued Him. I have responded to His call
mm-hmm.
in one way or another, and that's why
I think God could do that, though.
He could. Yeah. You're right, but that's not probably the fitting way that God would choose in most cases.
Correct. But it's not a logical contradiction
to operate His to bestow
the grace economy
as He deigns
the economy scale. Yeah.
As He deigns to do.
Right. So now that we have that kind of laid out, we're going to talk about Aquinas' like idea of what Christ's perfection in virtue is. And I think this is very interesting, especially in this time of year with it being the incarnation and Christ coming down and having, you know, Christ having a full human nature. We've talked about it before. Dave, you said like
a little tiny baby,
the whole WWJD, like you don't know, like, I don't know.
What would Jesus do?
He's a divine person. Know. But going through this, kind of
rebuke the wind.
It did kind of give me a little bit
last
better.
Last time I did that, I looked stupid.
Everybody laughed at me. But it did give me a better insight into this idea. So Aquinas talks about this. So that, you know, Christ is the exemplary man of all men, right?
He's totally exemplary.
He has all virtues, correct? Now he qualifies it.
Does he?
Okay, so he qualifies this.
Seems like he wouldn't have the ones that you don't have when you're in heaven.
Okay, man, well done. I don't know if you read that or not, but that's So this is very true. So what he qualifies it, right? So he says Christ has all virtues. Now he does not have his human nature does not have faith or hope, because faith is related to things not seen, and hope is for the supernatural end that has not yet come
as an
come to
omniscient
be.
Being.
Right. So he would say
he knows all, and so there's no room for faith.
There's no room for faith or hope because he knows what the end is going to be.
Right.
However, Aquinas talks about how those are imperfect so to speak, there's an imperfect aspect of those virtues in which, because we are at a human level and we're not at our final end, we're not up in heaven yet. And so there's some imperfections of these virtues. And so he says, he qualifies it by saying, no, he does not have it, but any perfections that are within the virtues of faith and hope, Christ will have.
Does he say what those are?
I think he actually does talk about that in the Summa, but I did not dive into that. But I thought that was very interesting. So he says the perfections of the intellect and will are conferred, conformed by the virtues of faith and hope.
Sweet.
So I thought that was very interesting, you know, to think about as Christ is walking here on earth, you know, that he didn't necessarily have the virtues of faith or hope, as long as those virtues are taken in the right context.
Right on.
So he says Christ's grace are both extensive and intensive. So extensive insofar as they rise above the effects of grace. Okay, and intensive because as full in preparation of the divine nature as is possible for the human nature. So that's important because Christ not only has all virtues, but he also has the virtues most perfectly.
Yeah. And it's not that he conforms to the virtues most perfectly as much as it is that the virtues conform to him. I mean, like, the reason the virtue is what it is because he is what he is, right? So it's not like, oh, there's a good outside of him that he is conforming to. He is the good. That right, and the good flows from him.
Right, you know, so in the hypostatic union, so, you know, there's Christ has two natures. He has a divine nature, a full 100% divine nature, 100% human nature. Mm-hmm. And his divine nature has the grace given from his divine nature saves his human nature. Okay, because the grace given from the divine nature is sufficient for all human
He's natures. Also not a human person.
Not a human person. He's a divine person. This is where, like, you know, you got to be very careful so we're not throwing around heretical ideas.
Got to use the right words.
Right. So, but for Aquinas, Christ is the virtuous man par excellence who possesses all virtues most perfectly and in an absolute unique manner that follows from his singular fullness of grace. So he's full of grace, right? So he has, from his moment of conception, he has all this grace, all the grace.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what I was saying is that, like, it's not like there's a standard outside of him that he's conforming to so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
That standard is that because that's what he is. If Jesus was something different,
right,
then the virtue would be something different.
Okay, but so let me throw this out there to you. So with that being said,
okay,
the biblical reference of Luke 2:52, it says that the boy, so this is when the boy Jesus was in the temple, right? So, and so he says, the boy Jesus advanced in age and wisdom and in grace before God and the people.
Yeah.
So what do you think that means?
I have a couple different guesses. This is the thing that I was thinking about guessing at. So one thing is that in his perfect humility, that he reduced himself willingly to conform to human standards. So one of that would be like intentionally depriving himself of certain knowledge, even though he would possess knowledge. Like he would still allow himself to learn things. It's not that he didn't know them, but like learning how to walk. He knew how to walk, but in order to humble himself most perfectly, he made himself learn it like any other man. Okay? Mm-hmm. So in that way, his human nature, you know, his when he was on earth, he still had to grow in things. So as obviously a baby doesn't have the capacity for courage that an adult man does. And so in that way, as he grew, he allowed himself to grow in his capacity for those virtues in a natural way, just like anybody. That's my first guess. I would also say possible, I'm just really totally guessing. But, you know, when we say he grew in grace, often that cannot, in English anyway, we might use that as an expression of him growing in, like, into manhood, you know, that there's sort of like a gracefulness when you get out of that awkward teenage stage. You know, like, you might sometimes use that phrase as you are, like, kind of coming into your adulthood, right, where you're kind of growing in gracefulness.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I don't know, those are two guesses. My My first answer, though, is really what I think it is.
Yeah, that's actually exactly right. So Aquinas proposes two options, right? So he gives two options here. He gives one that says that Christ has the habit of grace and wisdom that might be increased such that one becomes a participant in them more intensely, right? So
you're on the other page now?
Yeah. So more intensely. So like as he's growing in this virtue, he's able to do that more intensely, right? So as you love, you start loving, like for instance, for us, as we love adoration more and more and more. We have the capacity to love it more. But Aquinas firmly rejects this idea. He does not agree with this because Christ is fullness of grace from conception. So he does not agree with that. But he says in accordance, one might grow in grace according to its effects, inasmuch as one does greater and wiser works. Aquinas does attribute this kind of growth to Christ, since according to his progress in age, he did more perfect works. So just kind of like you're saying, at a human level, when he was there in the temple and he was 12 years old, he was saying things that were very intelligent. They were like, wow, what is Christ saying here? Like,
yeah.
But it wasn't to the point of him saying, that can't be. There's no way that the 12-year-old could say this. Like maybe if he's 8 or something like that, that could be the case. But Christ perfects every stage of life and gives us the example to live in every stage of life through how he lived his life to give us the standard to live by. If you're listening to the radio right now, we are out of time. We want to thank all of our listeners via radio. Go to thecatholicmanshow.com or check us out on the podcast or YouTube. We'll continue this conversation just a little bit more. I want to talk about Aquinas' sermon that he gives on Jesus' adolescence. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
I did not realize that we were that low on time. Sorry.
I got carried away with the topic.
Oh.
And I didn't pay attention. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No worries. No problem. So
he gives a sermon, huh?
Yeah, so he gives a sermon. And
Jesus had pimples. You think he did? I bet he did.
Yeah, it's a natural thing, I would imagine.
It's just weird.
weird
to think about God having zits.
Zits, yeah.
But who knows if zits were a cause of fallenness.
A fall?
Like Mary didn't have pain. Jesus didn't have zits.
Dude.
I mean, I think I don't know. I think it's a valid point. It's a natural thing that, like, it's like, well, is.
I'll bet in the garden they wouldn't have had them.
Do you think that they could have broken bones or pulled muscles?
I don't know.
I think so.
I think it's possible.
I think that's in accordance with nature. It's not like there's no, like, there's a lot of theologians that talk about this, you know, like, it's not like there was no death. In Eden, like animals still acted in accordance with their nature,
right?
So, anyway, that goes off field. So,
but I'm not going to say that it has to be that way.
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. That's not a topic that I've researched.
Does man's authority over the garden give him all like such authority that if I'm falling out of a tree, he could command the gravity to catch him? Like what? To what extent did his authority?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that answer. Like,
that sounds a little ridiculous, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the things that one of the things that Aquinas did, gave a sermon on Christ's adolescence, which I think is, kind of a bold thing to do, right? Because we don't know a whole lot about Christ's adolescence.
Basically, nothing. There was that one time when he ran away from home, you know.
Or he didn't run away. They left.
It does seem though, like Jesus. Come on, man. Like, you knew your mom and dad wanted you to be in the caravan, you know? Like, they didn't tell him, Jesus, like, it's time to go. Let's go get in the caravan, because he would have obeyed. I've always thought it was like, come on, Jesus. Like,
yeah. So he talks about. The question is asked, why did Christ not perform perfectly virtuous deeds from the very beginning of his earthly existence?
I think he did in accord in as much as
that is fitting
his
to
nature
to
was his fitting nature. For his nature, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's exactly what he says. I mean, he talks about it is
because it's virtuous for a baby to cry when the baby's hungry. That's that's a virtuous act because it's, you know, in as much as the baby can act. That's like the highest action in accordance with its good and with the truth. So like that's a virtuous thing for the baby to do.
Right. So
even though it like
yeah,
no, sometimes it's a little too much virtue. You right, know what
and,
I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, and so he talks about it. So he said he did not will to show his wisdom so that the truth of the human nature in him would be acknowledged and in order for it to give us an example of advancing in wisdom. So he did it so that way there was no question about him being full, having a full 100% human nature. You know, because he had a perfect human nature, but he was not a robot. It was not like that he was just robotic in these virtues, right? So he was all things as a human except for sin, right? So he still it wasn't like that he was a programmed like, oh, now you have 100% magnanimity. Now that you have now that you're age 7, you have 100% charity, you know, or whatever. He still
don't say it. Don't say something heretical right here.
No. I don't want to say anything heretical.
Okay, I feel like
no. He had 100% of the virtues, but he only acted in accord to the nature that he human nature in order so that it gives us the example of how to live a human life.
I thought you were going to say he still had to struggle with temptation. That's what I thought you were going to say. I thought that's where you're about to go with it, and I was like, bro. Don't do that.
Well, we know that he was tempted.
Well, just
now, whether he struggled with it or not.
He did not struggle with concupiscence.
Well, that's not what I was talking about.
Right, but that attraction to sin.
No, he did not have. He did not have attraction
to sin. So, like, temptation did not affect him. He could have. He was tempted.
He was so rightly ordered. He was so human. He was so 100% human, like, in the fullest capacity.
But he's also God at the same time. And God, you cannot tempt him. He is the
because
good.
He's going to do good. Yeah,
he is the good.
He is good. Yeah, right,
like,
right.
Anything good is because he is it, right? And so, like, it's not possible for Jesus to sin.
Right. Yeah. So Aquinas even says in here, it would be unfitting for Christ to display the fullness of wisdom he already possesses before an age when human beings would typically exhibit wisdom. So that's why they weren't. You know, even when he was 12 years old, that's not why they were like, well, this is impossible that this 12-year-old is spitting this out. You know, like, maybe it would have been if
although,
he was...
You know, at some point, there's like a time of coming of age, right, where, you know, now, it's, you know, like whatever age it was back then,
mm-hmm.
you know, okay, you're no longer a boy, you're a man. And so it wouldn't have been on, you know, now it's reasonable that, at this age, you would say wise things, right? So I wonder if at 12, that could have been, that time. It's like, hey, well, he's not a boy anymore. He's old enough to be wise. I don't know, like, when you became a man back then. I know it was a lot sooner than it is today.
Well, that's true.
Well, and he was also, I think it's beautiful that he was also asking questions. And how that is part of the learning experience. Now, sometimes you ask a question to make somebody
I've kind of
like,
wondered if it was like
realize.
More like a Socratic method. Yeah,
like.
Socratic dialogue. Yeah.
But he had to learn something.
Yeah, like, well, he did. But anyway, there have been certain Twitter posts in recent years where certain priests suggest that Jesus is like, learning something from the woman at the well, as if like he didn't know it before.
Yeah, so you know, even like, Aquinas says that God judged it more suitable that Christ should become a human in such a way that his execution of greater works of virtue was tethered to the growth in age.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of his human. The humbling act.
Right. It conformed him to a concrete situation of the human nature he was going to redeem, a nature in which it, at certain stages of development is not capable of performing advanced acts of wisdom or virtue.
I mean, Christ, so, his whole life is the cross, right? So in his passion, he gave everything he had to give. He suffered everything. And he
became fully human.
He did that from the beginning, right. that he lowered himself.
Right.
Like, if he had been wise from the beginning, oh, well, that means he could have humbled himself even more, right? He humbled himself the most he could all the time, whether it was in his suffering, whether it was in his, apparent ordinariness. All of the stuff, he gave everything.
Yeah, he became that which he redeemed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He became that which he redeemed.
But it's his whole life is just a witness of total gift, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a theoretical question on that topic.
Okay.
When we hear about Christ talking about his time coming, or his time has not come yet, mm-hmm. and we knew that he was growing in virtue throughout his life, it's like, do you think that when his time came, he was just perfect? He could not have grown it anymore. You know, had he just fulfilled everything he could fulfill, and then he just gave himself as that perfect gift?
That's a good question. I would say that yes, you know, like by the time he's doing his public ministry, this is just my own guess, he was perfect in all virtue, that there was nothing
from the moment he was born.
He
was a perfect in all virtue.
Right, but I mean, I think his question is more like from the human nature.
Conceived.
In the human nature, like whenever he was growing and learning, that he had just maxed that out.
I think, like, certainly by the time his public ministry had begun, at a human level, he had nothing left to grow, right? He wasn't still, like, learning or acquiring new virtue. You know, he wasn't still growing in virtue on a human level. I don't know what age that would be. But it seems like he would have been that way for a long time. This is just my own guess. Before he started his public ministry. I don't know. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I was trying to look it up here in this Thomas thing. So here Aquinas says, he argues that it would have been unfitting for Christ to display the fullness of wisdom he already possessed before an age when human beings would typically exhibit wisdom. So he wouldn't, even though he was already fully, he already was in full of that virtue or you know, exemplified that virtue to the max, he would not do that. He wouldn't be like courageous, like he wouldn't go into battle at the age of 6 or 5 or whatever the age was, because even though he would have that full virtue.
Yeah, but for example, would a 50-year-old Jesus would have been wiser than a 33-year-old Jesus?
So I'm going to say no.
No.
I would guess
Yeah.
around the age of 25, his human nature had like maxed out all stuff. I say 25 because that seems to be the age when most men, like,
yeah, so according have, like, to some progress mental
awakening
age.
And realize, like, I don't need to go to the bar on a Tuesday anymore. I should go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, so there's a whole thing in here where he talks about the difference between the habit. So there's a secundum.
I think you're misunderstanding the question. I think you're just. He said, you know, did you hear what he said? Like, what if Jesus had gone on living at 50, would he have been wiser than he was at 33?
Right. And so, like, there's this whole thing on habit versus act. And so it actually talks about in here that no, the answer is no.
Right. That's okay.
Yeah.
So at what age, what age did he max out all hit points?
I mean,
it's just, he said it was at the beginning. He said it was a speculative question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing 25 or younger.
Yeah.
It's just my guess. I'm willing to put something down. Put me down for 25.
Yeah, because the older he, you know, yeah.
That just seems to be when men.
Because according to
the
progress of his age, the greater works that he did, right? So. You know, I think it would be safe to say, I don't know this, I have not done deep, this is not a deep dive, so I'd be willing to say, though, that, you know, the miracle of the wedding feast at Cana was, you know, a great work, but everything, every miracle that he did after the wedding feast at Cana was a greater work than the wedding feast at Cana, because as he continued growing older, he was able to do greater works. So, like, you know, he didn't raise Lazarus from the dead. First, that wasn't his first. It wasn't not his first miracle. He did not, you know, give sight to the blind or anything like that. So I think that as he continued to grow, and then, you know, obviously to the point of, salvation, right? You know, he ended up dying for us, and taking on all of human sin.
I'm gonna disagree with you on your point there. I don't think that Jesus did, like, okay, he didn't raise Lazarus because, you know, he like still needed to grow in his capacity for miracles. I think he just didn't do that because it wasn't what needed to be done yet. I think that he certainly could have. There would have been nothing holding him back.
I definitely think he could have. I'm not saying he couldn't have.
Well, I mean, I was interpreting your answer to be, oh, that he still needed to like practice and grow in his capacity.
He does not have to grow. No, this is the difference between the act and the habit. Like the habit of growing. Like no, it is not necessarily that.
Juan's question. I think you're like overthinking Juan's question. Juan is asking, Jesus is like growing in his capacity for virtue as a boy.
We've done. We've already answered that question.
Yeah, and so for example, when he talks in Cana and he says, "My time has not yet come," was it time more like his time of growth? And his time of, or
it's the same question.
Or is it like an external time? I say, well, you guys are not ready for me. I've been ready this whole time, right? Or you guys aren't ready, or maybe my time hasn't yet come, and there's something else that I need.
Okay, well, the whole like his response to Mary at the wedding feast of Cana has prophetical consequences. Okay, so one of the things. You know, here Mary is asking him to produce gallons and gallons of wine, which is a fulfillment of a prophecy about the Messiah, that when the Messiah comes, there'll be the mountains and hills flowing with wine. Okay, and that was like a prophecy of the kingdom, that the kingdom has come, right? And Christ brings that to fulfillment on the cross. And so in one way, he's saying, my time has not yet come for that. Okay, so it's a multi-level, there's many layers to that exact exchange. So I don't want to oversimplify the complexity of that short dialogue between Mary and Jesus. But I would say no, he doesn't need to like grow himself anymore. And that it's more of like there's a specific time in history that God had ordained for all things to take place. The fullness of time for his, you know, death on the cross had not come.
Good. Thanks for entertaining my question.
It is a very complex exchange.
Yeah, when you start talking about this, like you have to be
Jesus
very...
Jesus the Bridegroom by Brant Petrie if you want to learn more about it.
Yeah, that is a great book. When you start talking about these kind of things, I get very nervous because you could easily
be way wrong.
You could easily be fall into heretical statements, not because it's actually what you're saying, but it's just you're not precise enough in your language, you're not articulate enough.
And I don't think this is going to be heresy. You're just going to be wrong.
You're just going to be wrong, right?
You're just going to look foolish.
I think you could probably reach out to Dr. Michael Wall, who wrote this article in the Thomist.
Wall or White?
Wall.
Oh, I thought you said
Father Joseph White.
Okay. That's the editor.
Yeah.
The editor is White.
Yeah.
The author is Wall.
Yeah. Dr. Michael Wall. Yeah. I think that you could probably reach out to him, and he was very responsive whenever I reached out to him. So I think he'd be more than willing to talk to whoever wanted to about this. And maybe he could even give you a part of his essay that he had in there. I don't know. I don't know that if he would be able to or not, but he'd at least be able to talk to you more about it.
Sweet. Anything else?
I don't know. It's just really interesting to think about as, you know, Christ becoming, you know, the God becoming man, especially in this time period. And then, like, what does that really mean for salvation? What does that really mean as a, you know, a human nature, divine nature, like the hypostatic union is so crazy. When you start thinking about his divine nature and his human nature and how they cooperate with one another and are distinct yet intertwined, yet save one and then, you know, fulfill the other. And, you know, you just like start thinking about it, and you're like, man, this is
It's hard, okay?
It's hard.
It's hard.
I think I need to go ice my brain.
Can I tell you something that I heard on Catholic Radio today that's completely unrelated, but like blew my mind a little bit?
Sure.
Who's the guy who's on at 4?
Al Cresta.
Al Cresta. He was on. I just kind of caught, came in.
We've met him before.
Yeah. Came in the middle of what he was talking about, but it was about anti-vegetarians. And so I was like,
I'm in.
All right. Al, it kind of surprises me, but he didn't like say this in these words, but he brought up like a really good point about like basically God didn't want people to be vegetarians. And he brought up the point that like, well, if you were a Jew and you wanted to be saved, you better not be a vegetarian because you had to eat the lamb.
And not just a piece of it.
It wasn't
all of it.
It wasn't enough to kill the lamb, put slaughter the blood on your door. Yeah. If you didn't eat it, you's gonna die. Mm. And so like, it's like, you know, Al, that is a very interesting point you make there. Not like vegetarians today aren't fulfilling God's will.
Right.
That's not at all what I'm saying. But there was a time at least where if you wanted to be one of God's people, you cannot be a vegetarian. At least not strictly so. You can say like, hey, I try not to eat meat, except when God makes me. Cool. Welcome to the club. But like,
actually, that's not the club I'm in.
It's not the club I'm in. But it just, I thought that was kind of like, wow.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
Never really thought about it that way.
That is very, yeah.
Not anything to do with our topic today.
That is pretty cool, though.
But I thought it was, like, funny, at least. Anyway. We done? Shut her down?
Yeah, I don't have anything else.
I was just going to say really quick, on the topic of Jesus and the maturity, and if he is to be the model of what a human is supposed to grow in wisdom and maturity and responsibility, it brings more light in this cultural shift of pushing responsibility, you know, 10 years up the ladder while you do everything else. And how is, if we are to models, like, let's give younger people more responsibility. You know, we talk about our grandfathers and great grandparents, you know, at age 17, they were captains of a warship.
Right.
And the decisions they had to make, and how I'm sure they were at a certain point aligned in virtue and the maturity to make those decisions, just like Jesus was aligning in virtue and maturity to do whatever he was, to do what he was fulfilling.
Yes, I agree.
Totally.
Stop being soft.